Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Shira Springer. We're closing out 2016 with a look back at the year in food, the top trends and innovations and notable restaurants. From tinned fish to smoothie bowls to kombucha, there's been plenty to partake. And we'll look ahead to what we'll be eating in 2017. Listeners, we want to hear from you. What food trends did you love this year? What do you want to see go away? And also, what are you planning to serve at your New Year's parties this weekend? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Joining us now in studio is Corby Kummer, James Beard Award-winning food writer, senior editor at The Atlantic, and restaurant critic for Boston Magazine. Corby, welcome back to Radio Boston.
So glad to be here.
First, let's talk food trends. What stood out most to you this year, and what had you coming back for seconds and thirds?
So, social consciousness was really taking off this year. Food waste had begun being kind of on the public's radar in a big way, actually exactly a year ago when there were tax breaks and various incentives put into the last-minute budget appropriation in the middle of December of last year to try to say we are going to take seriously the idea that we shouldn't be throwing out 35 to 40% of the food that's manufactured. Just this morning in my email, a food company said, we process vegetables and for frozen food and for school lunches, but we now have a way of using trim, one of those industry terms, and we've gone to zero food waste. I did a big piece this year for the New York Times Magazine about reducing sodium in frozen pizzas, and one of the things that Nestle, the manufacturer of like a million frozen pizza brands you never thought Nestle had anything to do with, said, but, you know, we have a lot to do with food waste now, and we have contests in our factories to eliminate food waste. The people who make Palm Wonderful, everybody is getting into food waste, and it's something that it just zoomed in public consciousness. This is something we should be concerned about.
And what about from the edible part side of things in terms of what you were eating, what you were seeing being served in restaurants or perhaps out of food trucks? What were some trends there?
So fermented everything. So, you know, we start with sriracha was the sauce that took America in, let's say, 2014 to 2015. Now you expect
it. I got caught up in that.
Where McElhenney's hot sauce used to be, and there's still Tabasco, there's sriracha. It's every place. So that is brewed and fermented. It's related to the ancient garum and fish sauce, which is fermented fish. So that's what makes for complex flavors. In order for big food companies like Nestle and Mars and everybody who makes savory foods to eliminate a lot of artificial food additives, they are making fermented foods because it adds complexity. So think vinegar, think soy sauce, but think barbecue sauce. It all has ferment in it. So when you said kombucha, everybody has a kombucha drink. It's just part of what's in the repertory now. Home pickles. Everybody has to have home pickles, including every restaurant.
Now, I'll say one of the trends I've been excited about is tinned fish. We actually have some tinned fish in the studio, some sardines, and some tuna in oil for everyone to sample. You can find it also at Salty Girl, which is Kathy Seidel's newest restaurant in Boston. And here she's talking about it with Chronicle on WCVB.
In my travels, I ran into a wonderful little stand-up bar in Barcelona where they were serving smoked fish in tins like I've never had in my life. The quality was so fresh. It was not what we conceived of as bumblebee or chicken of the sea, I can tell you that.
So have you embraced the tin fish trend? Well, you laughed, but I'm curious.
Yes, it's my secret vice.
So it
is my standard weeknight dinner. So I teach right here at Boston University. I teach food writing. And when I get back from my 3 hours in class, I always open up a tin of sardines. And I order them. In fact, I wrote a long piece for The Atlantic about sardines and going fishing for them. I went on a big annual tuna fishing expedition with a group of foodies who just love it, and then they have the fresh tuna every night. But what I was much more concerned with was all the sardines being used for food for the tuna, because I wanted to eat the sardines. You know, the heck with the tuna. I wanted the sardines. So I love fresh sardines, and I love tinned sardines, and I order them by the case from Zingerman's in Ann Arbor. They are Portuguese quality, and I see that you have brought in one of our favorite brands at home, which is our Ortiz, and I have little oval tins of Ortiz tuna by the case in our house.
So feel free to dig in, but I have to ask, how do you serve them? Do you just eat them raw, or do you put them with, you know, tomatoes on a baguette? I mean, what's the Corby way of consuming?
I get a fresh Ancien baguette from Clear Flour Bread right near the studios here of WBUR. I only have my own hothouse grown tomatoes. I'm lying. I just take them right out of the tin with a fork. I do have
you
a fish
fork. You had me going
fork.
There. You had me going there.
Well, I mean, that's how I should do it. But in fact, no, I have it straight from the tin. They're so flavorful. They're so good. And it's like we're coming out of the closet as tinned fish lovers, because it hasn't been something you admitted to. When I wrote about sardines and my sardine love, which is a good 5 years ago in The Atlantic, my then boss, the editor, James Bennett, said, well, you know, I really love sardines, but I certainly would never bring them into the office. You're not allowed. And here you are, and you have them in the middle of the WBUR studio. You're very daring.
I am. Now let's talk a little bit about, as you chow down on the sardines, and there's some tuna there too.
Everyone has to buy the best quality they can of tinned sardines and tuna. Follow Shira Springer's rule.
Let's talk a little bit about food piled into bowls. You have the ubiquitous, it seems, grain bowls. It's pretty much what they sound like, bowls of any kind of grain, rice, farro, barley, quinoa, topped with a veggie, protein, and some dressing. You also have smoothie bowls, again, pretty much what they sound like. Extra thick smoothies in a bowl, topped with nuts, fruit, maybe some shredded coconut. Are you a fan? Have you seen these all around? And does it have any staying power?
I'm very, very tired of what my revered colleague Jonathan Gold, the only Pulitzer Prize-winning restaurant critic so far in Los Angeles, calls things in a bowl. So although I'm very tired of them, and I say that with my food critic cynical jaded eye shade, I have them all the time. It is so useful to be able to go into a sweet green or beefsteak near the Washington offices of The Atlantic and the Aspen Institute, where I also work. There are both Sweet Greens, which is a chain that started by four Georgetown grads, now been hugely successful. The second place they opened was right here in Boston. They have a number of locations right here. You customize your own salad. It comes in a bowl. You put your own grain in as a base. Jose Andres, the fantastic Washington chef, started a rival chain called Beefsteak. The difference is the vegetables are blanched first, so they're boiled, and then there's various sauces, including sriracha and hot sauces. They just don't have tinned sardines as a topping yet. They're useful. They're healthful. I wrote a piece this year for the New Republic about a meal delivery service that David Chang of Momofuku helped start as a founder, that delivers bowls straight to your workplace and has been hugely popular because they're made fresh right for you online. So the idea that they travel well on bicycles, they're stable, that's all very good. They just look dreary in their brown cardboard recyclable boxes.
We're reviewing the year in food here with Corby Kummer. He's the James Beard Award-winning food writer, senior editor at The Atlantic, and restaurant critic for Boston Magazine. And listeners, we want to hear from you, too. What food trends did you love this year? What do you want to see go away? And also, what are you planning to serve at your New Year's party this weekend? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Are you noticing, let's switch to food trucks. Are you noticing any new trends with food trucks? I know they were big last year and the year before. They sort of had this big coming out party for themselves.
And I think they're going back in. As in, I think they're going back into the garages and opening bricks and mortar. They were like a testing lab for working out great ideas for small entrepreneurs, really low barriers to entry. It didn't cost that much to open one. The late Mayor Menino wanted to make Boston safe for them, and so he reserved a lot of parking spaces that you had to be very careful not to park in, lest you get really expensive tickets. So life became better for them, and it became better for all of us because we could have inexpensive food of all different kinds. They're an exciting trend, but when you see the trend is that Clover and Maymay and others that made big local successes of themselves as food labs, as innovators, have gone into bricks and mortar locations. Maymay has opened an actual restaurant. Clover has numerous locations and closed its original truck. They're not gone yet, but I think that that kind of innovation will maybe go back indoors.
I have to ask, what trends do you hope will go away? And personally, I have to wonder, are we finally past kale? Are we over that? Is that done?
I had drinks last night with friends whose child has so much kale every day that she is permanently bloated. So just this very morning, I was going online for bloat relief from overconsumption of kale. So I think that there has to be new kale tummy relief and the way to get rid of it. And I had kale salad last night, inadvertently from a very good takeout place. Everybody has to have a kale salad, and they have to have massaged kale. Yeah, I'd be glad to see a reduction of kale as long as there are dark leafy greens that substitute that are a little less challenging. I don't like the curly leafy kale that looks like parsley, for example. I like dinosaur kale, which is, you know, much more like bok choy or some kind of ordinary leafy veg.
We've got a couple of callers. Let's hear from Patrick, who is calling from Beacon Hill. Patrick?
Thank you for taking my call. Hi, I'm here.
Hi, tell us what your food thoughts are today.
So, you know, I love Sweet Greens as well, but, you know, I go there, I spend $15 for a salad, and, you know, I'm, you know, a young professional who lives in Boston, and it's how can you afford to eat healthy? I mean, I feel there's such a big socioeconomic problem with trying to eat healthy, and, you know, the food critic mentioned, you know, having fresh salad delivered to your office, but that's, how can you spend $15 a day on your salad?
Well, one of the things, that's always the question, how can it be constantly affordable? So Sweet Greens has a starting price that used to of $7.99, and you can eat fairly well for $7.99. Once you add the steelhead trout, which is what I often do because I'm trying to emulate Shira's tinned fish obsession, it does add $3 to $5 to it. But the service I wrote about in the New Republic that delivered lunches was actually more affordable than going out and getting them, which is, say, $9. But how do you do it? You go and prepare stuff yourself, or you buy it in a salad bar in a supermarket. Bring it in.
And we have also Shane, who is calling from Waltham. I think Shane wants to talk about grilled cheese. What do you have to say, Shane?
This is just simple and quick. Why are we calling grilled cheeses paninis? They're different, right? I'm not wrong there. And they should be fun-loving. Where do they go? They're dying. What happened?
I think that people just fell over in dead faints from the amount of fat and cholesterol they were having at the same time. It's hard to get through an entire grilled cheese. They're wonderful. They should be called grilled cheese because it's a great American treat with loaf bread in a Pullman pan and buttered on both sides and put under a grill. They're very similar to panini, but they're with U.S.-style bread. So it's not that much of a sin to call them panini. But, yes, America first, grilled cheese.
We have John from Lowell calling, and he wants to talk about how he's going to cater his New Year's Eve party. John, what do you have planned?
Hey, I got great plans. I decided, me and my girl decided, we're going to have Subway catering our New Year's Eve party.
That sounds like a perfect solution to me. And we also have Courtney from Gloucester, who's recently moved from Southern California and is not too happy with the array of produce, I understand. Courtney?
Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I'm loving being back in New England. I can even deal with the weather, but the thing that has me looking back to the West Coast is the lack of reliable, fresh, organic produce that I'm so used to out there. I'm wondering if he knows of any sources from which to get this reliably throughout the year.
Well, sure. It's very hard to beat Whole Foods. And everybody loves to beat up on it, but for the produce. And every foodie's secret is Russo and Watertown. So if you have access to them, you go out. I love organic. I believe in it as a way of helping the environment and especially the health of the workers. But I will always go for a local supplier to find fresh produce. And you should go to the Boston Public Market at Haymarket if you haven't been yet, because there are at least 3 farm stands that sell interesting, good produce all year round.
We've got a very little bit of time and so much to get to with the year in food. But quickly, Corby, if you could talk about the 2 large marketplaces that open this year, Eataly and Boston Public Market. First of all, Eataly, is it as big a deal as everybody's making it out to be? And if just 15 seconds on Eataly.
A very huge, fantastic deal of terrific imported and great locally produced foods. I'm really happy Eataly has opened.
And it was a big year for restaurant openings. If you had to pick a couple of your favorite openings, what would they be? I think I might know what one is again quickly.
Oh, well, if one is Bar Mezzana, which is the subject of my current review in Boston Magazine, and where I'm going tonight, which I can reveal because I've already reviewed it. I love their open face sandwiches, which they don't call panini, I don't think. Our caller is very against panini. but that's been one of my favorites. Any place that's, you know, really small and local, I love. And you were thinking of?
Mamala's.
Oh, we love Mamala's. Mamala's for really locally made deli meats. And with the tragic passing of the Carnegie Deli just this week, served its last pastrami sandwich. Now we can get our own homemade pastrami, rye bread.
That's Corby Kummer, James Beard Award-winning food writer, senior editor at The Atlantic, and restaurant critic for Boston Magazine. Thank you again for joining us, and Happy New Year.
And happy eating for 2017.
Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Shira Springer, and this is Radio Boston.
How can our love go wrong if we start the new year?